Hello and welcome to the Europeans. We are all together in one room.
Yay! We're in Warsaw.
Welcome to Warsaw.
Wojciech has organized a wonderful few days for the whole of the Europeans podcast team to explore his wonderful city of Warsaw while we discuss some important things that we never get around to discussing and think about the future of this little baby podcast of ours. And today we thought, because we're all together, that we would bring you a little Q&A, question and answer episode.
Yeah, it's the first time we've ever done this. So we've asked our supporters to write in with basically any question that they have ever wanted to ask us. And producer Katz, you have the list, I believe, in front of you.
I do have the list. Let me see. Federico asks, what is your feeling about the EU compared to when you started the podcast years ago? Do you think the institution is stronger, weaker? And what do you think about the level of support you see across the continent? Oh my God, the world is unrecognizable. So much has changed. What do you guys think?
Was that you at the end or was that?
That last bit was definitely me. Okay. Oh my God, that was Katz's response.
Okay, just checking.
What a different era. I mean, it makes you realize just how long we've been making this podcast, that we started this podcast in the Jean-Claude Juncker era, which is so mad. Like Ursula von der Leyen was not already in power as the quote-unquote queen of Europe. And something that I think I've really noticed is that how the EU communicates has got a hell of a lot better since we started making this podcast. I don't know if you would agree with that. But when we first started this podcast, I mean, one of the main missions we had was to demystify this weird beast that was the European Union, which is incredibly powerful and has a lot of power over how we live our daily lives, but we didn't know how it worked. And that job of understanding it was made a lot more difficult by the fact that the EU at the time was incredibly bad at communicating. And yes, sometimes it is still bad at communicating, but I think they have got a lot better at using plain language and explaining what they do in a kind of normal person way.
I find this a really difficult question to answer because honestly, I wasn't taking much notice of what the EU was saying before we started this podcast. Yeah. Like part of the reason why we went on this journey was because we realized ourselves that we had no idea what the EU actually did and who the people were that were running it. So I find it hard to know how much of it is that we've just spent 7 years podcasting about the European Union and Europe more broadly. And now I actually am just aware of what's going on and therefore think it's better and how much they've actually improved. I think they probably have improved.
A little bit. And when you look at things like, you know, tangible things like election results, the turnout, we've covered two European elections is now.
Elections is.
Against me, girl.
Which is my first language, thank you. We've covered two European elections now, and turnout has been slightly up in both of those. Maybe only slightly, but I think it does show very, very slightly that people are paying a little bit more attention to European affairs than they were, maybe.
I also think it's a hard question. I have the same as Dominic, that I just didn't know that much about what the EU was doing. And now I'm like, oh, they're so important. But maybe that's just because the biggest change from my perspective is that I know what they're doing a bit more now. But I also just think the world was such a different place. Like the most dramatic thing was like, oh my God, Brexit just happened. Like there's that kind of major level news now every week. I mean, like war felt really far away. There were so many things that just I don't think we could have dreamed of. Not just the EU, but like Europe and the world has changed completely.
Yeah. The only thing I would add is that, you know, as a person from a country that joined EU pretty late, I remember I took it for granted that this is like the final product of European democracies working together. And then like, woo, the Brexit happened. Then like we have this surge of far right and like a lot of, you know, anti-European Union, you know, forces being really, really, you know, having their say now. So yeah, to me, it's been like a process of realization that this project really requires some effort from all of the parties to really be what it is supposed to be. And I think it's good. And I think that some of the energy that I felt like, you know, 20 years ago fizzled out. A lot of people are slightly disappointed, but then I see how it really works in some areas and how important it is, even like given that we have this new ideas for what Europe could be. So I think it's a work in progress and it probably will be forever.
I think something that's going to be really interesting to keep an eye on in the next few years is how attitudes to the EU change in candidate countries. Because there are all of these countries that have been kept hanging for years already in the Western Balkans. And, you know, EU membership has been sort of dangled as a carrot for good behavior and like, ooh, maybe one day if you're very, very good, we might give you this very precious thing called EU membership. And certainly, you know, if you'd ask people in countries like Albania, maybe 6-10 years ago, how they felt, attitudes were extremely positive and everyone really wanted it. And now it feels like in several of these countries, people are starting to get really pissed off with just how long they've been made to wait for this thing that might never happen. So that's something that I certainly want to keep an eye on with this podcast in the next few years.
Next question.
Okay, this is from Joanna and she says, okay, this is a personal one. I presume you won't answer, but maybe you will. I want to know how you're coping with managing this podcast and with your bubba, as in your baby. How are you finding it, having to turn your brain into such a different mode again? Has it been easier or harder than expected to combine these parts of your life? Maybe it's also interesting because we have two members of our team that have kids. Do you want to answer this question?
Yeah, I assume it's for me. That wasn't actually specified, but I am the person here with the baby. It's been a really mixed experience. In some ways, you know, I live in a country, France, where it is taken for granted for most parents that mothers will go back to work at about 3 or 4 months, which is pretty early by the standards of a lot of other rich countries. For me, that's something that I liked and appreciated, and that works for me because I like my work, and my work is quite a big part of my identity and who I am. But I won't lie, you know, it was really, really tough. And the way that things worked out for us was we were making a big series about Oatly just after I had my baby. So that was really fun, recording bits and pops with you guys about, what, 10 days after giving birth?
Don't talk about that.
A big public apology to Katie Lee.
Very giant public apology.
It's my fault too. Something I found as a journalist and a parent is that at the very beginning, I found it really hard to care about current affairs and the news. You know, you turn inwards when you have a little person arriving in your life. And for weeks, I found it, well, it was a mixed thing. It was, on one hand, really hard to care about what was happening in politics. And in another way, I kind of appreciated it because it forced me to care about stuff that was happening outside my home. And I think a lot of people don't have that privilege. I think I'm going to call it a privilege. But it's been hard, you know, there are some late nights involved in making this podcast, quite a lot of juggling, but I think we're doing okay. My baby is still, you know, in one piece, so that's good. And so am I.
No, I'm really proud of you. It's really nice to see you learning, and like, we all didn't know what was going to happen, least of all you, on like how this would influence the podcast. And it's nice to see how it's evolved.
And it also means that, you know, we have now two parents on our team, and so more people interested in making stories about things like childcare. I am really, really keen to make a story comparing childcare systems across Europe in the next few months / year. So watch this space. I really hope that's something that can happen. But Wojciech, you've got two kids, slightly older than mine.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, my life changed completely, my professional life, when I had my first kid. I was also like changed professions, but now it's something that really gives me energy to work. I would maybe have to work like 2 days a week if I didn't have kids, and probably that's what I would do. And the funny thing about it is that I'm the person who picks up kids from school / kindergarten, so I have this dead zone in the middle of the day, which is like 3 p.m. to 5 p.m., where a lot of people want to have interviews, they want to have meetings, which is a bit uncomfortable, but it's like you can accommodate. But obviously, then you end up with late nights, which I'm trying to limit now, but they still occur sometimes, especially with the special episodes.
Mm-hmm. Next question.
Yes, Dominic and I will be representing the polyamorous subjects of this podcast for the foreseeable future. Moving on swiftly. Anna says, how does the week look like for you? I think you record on Monday. So what happens on Tuesday? Is there a weekly schedule? I think it's very impressive, Anna, that you know we record on a Monday.
It is impressive. Well, often on Tuesday mornings at the moment. It used to be Monday sometimes.
Yeah. It's true.
For some reason, it's become mostly Tuesday mornings.
There were actually quite a few questions about our process, like how do we make the podcast and how do we find our stories? And so I sort of jumbled them all into one. But it seems like people really want to know how we make this thing. So it's nice to let them in.
Well, we have a Monday morning meeting where we start discussing stories that we might want to talk about in Good Week, Bad Week, amongst the four of us. And then Katie and I usually spend Monday researching whatever topics we've chosen. And then we record on a Tuesday. And then a combination of Katie and Wojciech, or sometimes Katz, or sometimes another producer called Morgan, edit the rambling that me and Katie have done on that Tuesday morning into something that's a bit coherent.
Yeah. The interviews sometimes happen at different points in the week, depending on how newsy it is. So sometimes we'll have an interview that is about something that's happened that week, maybe the European elections, for example. So that will be done probably on the Monday or Tuesday morning. And then Tuesday is spent editing, cutting down the show and making it sound all nice. And then Wednesday, I tend to give it to you to listen through. And you say, no, take this out. I sound stupid. And then the rest of the week, we are mostly looking forward to future episodes and thinking about future guests. We do have a very active Slack channel where we drop things like, oh, this might be a good story for later in the week. Often those ideas come from our listeners. So our listeners will message in or drop stories on our Patreon Facebook group or send them in by email from different corners of Europe. And we'll think, oh, that might be an interesting thing to cover in next week's show. So we'll drop it in the Slack and then, spend the next week scrolling back up that list and thinking, oh, yeah, those are the two stories from the week that would be really good to cover.
Something that's worth mentioning, and I get asked a lot about that, is like whether our interviews are edited. So they are. We usually talk to our guests for 20, 25 minutes, and then it's being cut down to 12 minutes, which is usually very challenging because our guests are awesome and you would like to play the whole thing. Yeah, so they are heavily edited because like half of what was recorded goes into the final cut. And Wednesday is for mixing too, which is a very important part of this operation.
I don't know what we'd do without you, Wojciech.
I think people maybe don't even know what mixing is.
Yeah, so just one sentence about it. It's like everyone records in their own space, like, you know, across Europe. And the point is to make it sound even and pleasant for your ears and to have it project through like your noises around you, like when you're on a bus or on the train. So yeah, so that's the part that I take care of. And I take a lot of pride in this.
It's a much underappreciated part of making audio, I feel.
It is.
I think people think that we just turn up and talk in front of a microphone. And actually, this is one of those things where a load of work goes into making the European sound as good as it does every week. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Oh, I like this one. Owen asks, do you ever wish that you didn't all live so far away from each other? Or are you glad that the podcast is so pan-European?
Oh.
Yeah, I can start with this one. I do find it quite hard, like, how much of my work is behind a laptop, because one of the reasons that I love making radio is that I get to, like, go out into the world and talk to people. And that's been such a valuable part of working at the Europeans, I think, for 6 years now. Wild. Is like going and talking to all these people in like rural Hungary or wherever and learning about their lives. And I wish that that was a larger percentage of it. And I think in terms of working together, we've gotten so lucky that we as a team get on fairly well, because a lot of our work time is like being very efficient through a screen, which I don't think is very conducive to like, yeah, you don't have a lot of time to have fun together or understand each other or whatever. So I think we've gotten really lucky. So I really do think it contributes to the quality of the show that we're really all looking at current affairs from different national perspectives. I really don't think it would be as strong if we all lived in the same place. But it would be nice to be able to do what we're doing now sometimes and like have a drink. We do that like once a year and max. And that I think would be nice if it was a little more frequent.
Yeah, sorry to get all mushy for a second, but it's times like this where we're all together in one place and we've been like drunk cycling. And...
No, of course we haven't.
Oh, sorry. Cycling.
Nothing illegal.
And like just having a really fun time together and having all kinds of conversations that I do really wish that we lived in one place. But it does make me feel really lucky that I get to work with three really good friends all the time.
Imagine if we had an office.
Incredible.
Where we could all go every day.
Where would it be? Where's equidistant between us all? Berlin probably.
Yeah. Okay.
Done.
We're moving.
We can just be that train teenager and have the office on the train and just move around each other's countries.
That's referring to this man who lives on a train in Germany, like every day of the year. He doesn't own a house.
It'd be really fun for the engineering and the mixing of the audio quality.
But it's true. It's so nice working with you all, and it's so nice being together in one place and seeing your whole selves, not only your whole bodies, because we only ever see the head and neck on Zoom, but like just experiencing what it's like to have conversations that don't have to fit into a 1.5-hour Zoom meeting.
Yeah.
You really have time to talk about other things and reflect on how things have been, which is why it's so important that we do this once a year, have this summit.
What I will say is that you are all extremely tall, and I spent the last 2 days running after you with my little short legs. I'm not even that short, but you're all giants. It's really exhausting.
Kat and I are making a real effort to walk slowly.
Yeah, we had like a 10-minute conversation about how we could feel our core muscles really having to work hard because of the slower pace of the walking.
Thank you, tall people.
We were having some interesting conversation about parenting and podcasting, and we were like, my core muscles are very confused. No, I think you also, you work this long together and you care about each other and you also get curious, like, what is happening in your lives and how is it to be living in this country when this is happening? And we get a tiny bit of time to talk about that, but not much. Mm. So that is really very, very nice. This is a good one for you, Wojciech. Are you guys planning to make an AI-translated podcast anytime soon? Mm. I remember you talked about it last year and you had some experimenting already. As my favorite podcast, I wish for more people to listen to it.
Aww.
Yeah, so I remember. It's a short but funny story. So last year we met in Amsterdam and we had this fantasy that maybe one day in the future that would be possible that some machine would translate whatever we were saying into all the official languages of the EU. And then 6 months later, we produced the first piece where some of the quotes of our guests from Bulgaria, Hungary, and Poland were actually translated by AI. And we thought that this was really amazing. And everybody that listened didn't notice that it's a translation because actually the protagonists, we could hear their voices and they were just speaking flawless English despite not knowing the language. So we see this as opportunity. It's not yet there. We're trying to automatically translate entire episodes and it was funny. Maybe we can play a clip.
Why don't we play me with an extremely Quebecois French accent? Just because it's very weird for me to hear myself speaking French, but as if I'm Canadian.
Mais en fait, vous savez comment je suis la mère d'une petite personne française ces jours-ci? J'apprends beaucoup de chansons pour enfants françaises parce que j'ai grandi avec les chansons anglaises, mais je pense que mon enfant français devrait bien sûr connaître toutes les vraies chansons françaises.
Yeah, it does something to accents. Like the last time we voice cloned Dominic, he was like Aussie slash
Essex.
Yes, slash Essex. That was pretty funny. But yeah, but it is the future, and I think it's gonna come sooner than later.
And we have big plans.
Yeah,
on that front, if anyone has a lot of money to give us to help develop them.
I mean, there's a couple of things for us specifically that are really exciting about this. And one of them is that, you know, you can't subtitle podcasts. That's always been one of the frustrating things about making audio internationally as opposed to some sort of video project. You can't subtitle it. So in the first years of the podcast, we relied quite heavily on using voiceover artists.
A bit sad for the voiceover artists.
Yeah, we might be inadvertently firing a whole bunch of voiceover artists. And really, ever since the beginning of the podcast, we've mostly relied on guests that can speak very, very good English. And I would really love to make the show a bit more diverse by being able to speak to a much wider range of people and potentially get this podcast into the ears of people that don't speak English. How cool would that be?
Absolutely. I think we're also lucky as a team because we have like 7 to 10 languages between us. So it's not total, but it just really adds to the listener experience. Like we can still talk to people in our language because I don't want people to think that we're just like full on Anglophone team.
Yeah.
That would really not be accurate. But yeah, I think it really changes the listener experience rather than having one of us translate.
The best part about this experience was that when I first cloned voices of our protagonists for that story, I was afraid that they were going to be mad at me or like, you know, it feels like you're stealing something from them. Obviously, I asked them in advance, but then all of them, except for one person, like wrote me that it's incredible that they felt great, that they could really like explain something in detail in a language that they feel comfortable in. And then that was like really perfectly translated to flawless English that is comprehensible for the end, you know, listener, which I think is really valuable.
Using their voice.
Mm. Yeah.
Also, I just realized as you guys were talking, it would make grandparent to Axel an option. This is what a generation sounds like with 80 plus year olds, which is a series
that
I have been dreaming about for a very long time.
Yeah.
Next question from Stephen. The podcasts and presenters are superb, and the interviews and contributions from others are always interesting.
Thank you, Stephen.
God, thanks, Stephen.
I love that this Q&A is just total ego fluffing for us. I almost always agree with the contributors and wondered if you would consider interviewing more people from different political persuasions. Just a thought, although the ethos of the podcast is pro-Europe and mustn't change. I really like this question. It's actually something that has come up in our meetings in the past couple of months, just because there's been a lot of conversations about like the far right and, you know, in the run up to the EU elections and various other elections. So we have actually talked about it recently. We had that one episode where a Hungarian student interviewed his far right classmate, I was remembering. And it's like occasionally we have people that have quite different opinions to ours. But we have been talking a bit about how we would want to do that. Does anyone want to answer?
I just want to say that this episode, Philip and Lachi, was my favorite episode of yours before I joined. Really?
Oh,
yeah, I just realized that. The ones that stayed with me for longest.
Katie worked incredibly hard.
I didn't want to make it. And Dominic was like, here's a really good idea. I'm also not available to do any of the work. Okay, bye. So I'm glad to hear you say that.
Second apology to Katie Lee.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's obviously, if you interview people with very extreme beliefs, this whole debate around whether you should give someone like that a platform. I don't think the question is necessarily whether we should give far right people a voice on this podcast. Obviously, if we did so, they would be there to be challenged. But I'm very interested in having people who are perhaps slightly less progressive in terms of their political alignment than we would consider ourselves to be. And then maybe challenging those views and having a good, very well-sourced debate. I think that's something that we should do. I do think it is also a question of resources, though. You know, like if you do have someone that you really disagree with coming on the show, you've got to be damn well prepared for that conversation. And even though we are in a much more financially stable position than we were a few years ago, that's the sort of thing that like would really take a lot more resources to prepare for an interview. And it's something that I do think we should do, and it is important, but we need to be really careful still about where we put our resources.
Yeah, I find it tricky because the tone of our show isn't particularly adversarial. Like, we're not interviewers who have this kind of like political debate with our guest. And part of me thinks, yeah, that's just not what this podcast does. There are other journalists and other podcasts and radio shows where that is done really well, and maybe we should leave that territory to other people. And part of me thinks that, but then on the other hand, it is good to have a diversity of views. And for example, on the topic of migration in Europe, something, this huge topic which that's clearly dominating the political debate like in most of the continent right now, I feel like in order to have that conversation properly on a podcast like this, we would have to be speaking to various different people with different viewpoints. And I would like to be able to make space for that with all the different viewpoints and have some kind of conversation and dialogue that would help people understand what's going on a bit better.
I think you're also asking more from your interviewees. Like, it's, you ask for them to be comfortable with being challenged, and that's just like a different question than, and of course we do sometimes challenge our interviewees, but it's a more rigorous challenging, so we'd have to sort of create that. It is something I've been thinking about a lot, especially watching polarization get bigger and bigger in my country, in a lot of the countries and around us. And I think, God, the sun is so Trumpy in a lot of the country. how am I going to come back from this? In a time when there's just more and more polarization, I'm really grateful to have people in my life that I don't agree with. And I find it quite healing, because it's like I was telling Katie last night, actually, that I traveled through the States during the Trump, Clinton, Sanders primaries for 3 months. And I had a lot of really nice conversations, and ones that I have thought about very regularly since, where I just talked to a lot of people that I didn't agree with and why they felt that way about migration or why they felt that way about guns. And it felt very respectful. It wasn't like adversarial, like in the sense of like, you know, yelling at each other or something, but it helped me understand. And that's something I've been missing recently, especially since I moved back to the Netherlands, that I don't have that many people in the Netherlands that I don't agree with. Mm-hmm. And I miss it because it makes it just that much harder to understand why people are voting in a way you don't agree with. Yeah.
In conclusion, it's an ongoing debate, I think, but certainly something that we're very, very open to.
And before we move on, I think if you asked every guest that we have had on the show in the last year which political party they voted for in the last European elections, I think we'd have quite a range.
Mm, yeah, I agree with that.
Another good question. Noble asks, everybody take a deep breath. Have you ever had an episode that turned out to be much easier or much more difficult than you were expected to make?
What a question.
Lol. Oh, man. We were talking about this yesterday, that we really consistently underestimate how much work these narrative deep dive episodes are. I will say that Klima Señorinen was actually a very light and smooth load in comparison to what I thought it was. So that was an exception to that.
That's the episode about the climate senior citizens in Switzerland who took their government to court for not protecting them against heat waves and the effects of climate change.
Great episode.
Yay.
On the flip side, I would say, Wojciech, your recent episode about farming lobbies originally started as like, let's make a nice straightforward one interview or two interview based episode, and it sprawled into this mammoth investigation, which I am extremely proud of, and I think it's one of the best things we've ever done. But my gob was a lot of work.
Absolutely. I think we could get better at knowing how difficult those are going to be and seeing it coming. I think especially that one with the subject matter, it's just really hard to keep it. I think we could have been more realistic on that front. Federico asked a big question. What is the plan for the podcast for the next 2 to 3 years? Where do you want to be? Do we have an answer to this question?
Well, it depends on whether we have any money.
Yeah.
Sadly.
That is a really hard thing, I think, about our podcast. I wonder if people hear that in the desperation. But it's so hard for us to plan for the next 2 to 3 years because we often have a one-year budget. So then we have to think about, like, what's our fantasy with no money? What's our fantasy with lots of money? But that said, let's still try and answer it.
We are so grateful to the support of all the people that give money, either through Patreon or via our website. And we've had a few individual donations recently that have been incredibly helpful, larger ones. Thank you. If you want to join them, then please do. So, yeah, we know we can make a certain amount of episodes. But in order to do the really ambitious things that we like doing, like these special series, the investigative series, and the more like narrative sound designed episodes, then that really depends on us finding money.
Absolutely.
Extra money.
I think it's really important to say that, you know, we have 4 part-time staff members on this podcast. And I think what we do with our budget is really incredible. When you look at the list of credits for a lot of the top American podcasts, it's like 55 people working on this thing. And we produce, I think, a really good thing every week on this really part-time team. And there's a lot of things, you know, people often say, oh, you could do this, you could do that. We would love to do all of those things. We would love to do more in-depth series. We would love to, frankly, produce much more bonus content, I think, for the people who are generous enough to support our show. But with the resources that we have, with 4 part-time staff members who have to have other work, our ability to do that is sadly pretty limited. So I think getting us to a place where several of us could work more full-time on the Europeans would be really cool, because I think it would just also allow us to kind of escalate our growth and make more cool stuff so that more and more people want to listen to us.
Should we mention a few of the specific ideas we have for the next 2 to 3 years? Or
yeah.
Is that giving too much away?
No, let's do it. Yesterday we were talking a bit. We got a very nice email from one of our listeners who said that they were already a Patreon, but that they wondered if they could do something additional, for example, funding 1 episode or something like that. And we were actually talking about we had an idea for a series that we won't go into too much detail about yet, but about something that touches a lot of Europeans' daily lives. And we thought, would it be possible? Could we pull it off if we had several listeners who would be willing to donate a little bit more, and that we could have the very proud accomplishment of a listener-supported special series? That's not something we've ever tried before, but we do think it would be really exciting. And yeah, a different style of independent journalism, and also that we could maybe involve you guys so that we could ask you, what do you think our episode should be, or what do you want to hear about? And we think that would be really fun because we get a lot of very good ideas. Yeah, so that would be exciting. Who knows if it'll work?
You're being very enigmatic about what this series is.
Well, I just learned on this retreat, no, this summit, that I'm the most enigmatic member of the team, and I'm going to wear that proudly. I've never felt mysterious ever before. How nice. I think something else is we're also just real people, so it really depends on like what happens in our lives. Maybe that's something that we don't talk about very often, but like...
That we're real.
That we're real. We're real humans.
Well, you're
AI.
Not AI
robots.
Yeah, far from me.
The three of us are sitting here with a robot right now.
Dominic is gone.
If like I have to leave my flat, then it changes. I have like a part-time, not so reliable job. Or if anything happens in one of your lives, that does influence things. So it's a bit harder than I think to come up with a long-term vision when there's not a lot of stability. One of my big fantasies for a long time is that we get one or two additional members of our team so that our geographical spread is a bit better. I would love that. And I just so often, I know a lot of really excellent audio journalists around Europe who have really good ideas, and it would be so nice to be able to really make use of all of the talent across our continent and be able to say, yes, your brilliant idea, we can fund it, we can pay you for it. Please teach us about the place that you're from.
Here,
here. And I went away.
Related.
Sorry.
get it together.
Dominic started it.
Something else.
Katie.
Something else we always have when we meet in real life is that Katie's way more silly in real life.
And also,
so much fun.
I always forget she's good at singing and loves harmonizing.
I don't know why you forget. I sing in our meetings all the time.
Not enough.
Not enough. Well, I'll take that
and
feedback.
I don't think Katie is not hilarious online. We have like really a lot of great jokes on our private chat. Yeah, it's one of my joys of every day. Just
thank you.
Sending
guys.
Each other stupid memes and yeah, not
keep
really.
Keep it coming. I'm good really, at singing. I'm hilarious.
But you're not enigmatic.
Yeah, you're not.
Definitely not enigmatic.
You're very efficient. I think that's it. But in real life, you're like silly at the cost of efficiency. And this is not a side of Katie I see often online, as much as I enjoy working with you. All right, moving on swiftly before our team crumbles into pieces. Well, I think this is a related question. We got a couple of different people asking, including Fabian. What would we do if we had way more money? We talked about it a little bit of like dreams of the show, but maybe it is nice to answer this question more specifically of like, what would be the first things we would do if we had five times the budget? He also adds that he doesn't have the money for us. Don't get too excited.
Fabian.
Very sweet though.
I think one of the things we'd do is we would really invest time and money in growing our audience and actually promoting this show. Because
yes.
I mean, we've been so grateful to everyone who's made this a kind of word of mouth success, but we have never really had the time or resources to actually do the things you can do to grow a podcast and make more people know that we exist.
And also something that like big outlets and like newspapers that have a podcast or public media, they spend so much money. They're like whole publicity departments. And every time one of us freelances for those, we're like, oh, what would our show be like if we had like three people constantly mailing all of the media across Europe being like, hi, we've got a new episode. Please talk about us. For example, many other things. We've gotten really lucky, but it would be really nice to grow. And so much of our lovely listeners do say, why didn't I find you sooner? I wish everybody listened.
Yeah.
We wish that too.
In terms of content, I would love to see much more of our content made like on the ground rather than ringing people up. I mean, we ring amazing people up every single week, but I'd love to see some of those people in the flesh.
Something else I would be really excited about is making much more investigative content. I think audio and investigative works so well because of the storytelling of the medium. I think it would really add a lot to our continent if we had like really strong investigative audio. There are so many things that I hear about that I'm like, oh, imagine if we had like deep dive, massive audience for a serial of Europe or something like that. I think
yeah,
that would be super exciting.
Yeah, and also more investigative content that connects what's happening with Brussels with what happens on the ground in Europe, in our towns and cities and villages. I think that would be really cool.
Or like, I don't know, just like a really cool investigative story about Italy. I would listen to that.
Creepy local mayors. That's what I'm interested in. It's very specific.
Fabian also asked, what is the best feedback you have ever received on one of the shows? What do you guys think?
It is amazing how you remember the bad feedback so much more than the positive feedback. I think like 1 in 100 reviews we've got is a negative review. It's probably that kind of ratio.
Yeah.
But they are burned in our soul.
Our
collective soul.
We sometimes get the feedback that we speak too quickly and a little bit too native English oriented. And I think that's really a helpful reminder for us of like, hang on, slow down. So I appreciate that that comes in every now and then and reminds us to not skew too much towards our biases as well.
Yeah, me too. In terms of genuinely lovely feedback, I mean, we get so much of it. And it is honestly the main thing that keeps me doing this. I don't know about you, but like we get those emails that are just like, thank you so much for, you know, making me understand the continent that I live on a little bit better. And I think the ones that I like best are the ones that say that your podcast gives me a little bit of time in my week to feel a bit more European and just engage with what it means to be European and think about what it means to be European. Just 30 or 45 minutes to feel European every week. And I think that's just such a lovely thing.
Yeah. I think especially with the This Is What a Generation Sounds Like series, just because I've worked on a lot of those for more time, I really get so moved and sometimes even cry, just a few tears, of like people saying, I feel so seen and so recognized. I remember people writing in after the Josh and Franco story who were like, had grown up gay in rural Italy and felt like, yes, I recognize, or even not, and just talking about masculinity. And the same with almost every episode, there was at least one really lovely message of someone who felt really seen and like they were being talked about on an international outlet. And that made me feel really, really nice and motivated.
I think maybe one of the best like reviews we've had written by a professional critic was really early on this website called The Constant Listener, where someone said that our podcast, The Europeans, makes the case for the medium, and that we were like,
whoa.
It made him feel like we were some kind of new wave of pirate radio. And I was really, really proud when we read those words written about our little baby podcast.
Me too.
I think also that we're an independent show that is still going for 6 years is pretty amazing feedback. Like, I don't know that many shows that run that long other than the really big flagship ones. I feel like we're grandparents of podcasting, and I love that. I've been an old lady since I was little, and it's representative of that.
Okay, we've inflated our egos enough. Next question.
Yeah, absolutely. Next question. Britt asks, what are some dream guests, interviews, or projects for the team? I think it's nice towards the end to think about big dreams.
Ooh, the dream interview list. We haven't been there for a while.
I can go first.
Go ahead.
There's quite a few absolutely stunning and incredible women I want to interview.
Can I tell us?
Yeah, that's for one. I mean, maybe like not now, but like, you know, in a few months when she settles as a, do you remember that name?
The High Representative
for International Affairs.
Foreign Affairs.
Foreign Policy Boss of the EU.
Exactly this. Then I reached out a few times to Svetlana Tikhanovskaya. I really wanted to talk to her. She's obviously the sort of emigre president of Belarus. Incredibly influential person in this sphere. And then I have to say, I so much dream sometimes about getting like a long sit-down interview with Angela Merkel and like really trying to understand whether she thinks that everything she's done was like actually correct or not, given what happened, what went down in the last 2 years.
That would be so good. And she's got time now.
She's got time. She does some speeches at German universities, where she reportedly is being pretty defensive, and they are absolutely forbidden to be recorded. So I think that would be a super cool special.
I would really love to talk to more normal people. It comes up a lot. And like, I would love to talk to an older lady who loves cold swimming, for example. They're just really quite hard to find. But in life, I come across really interesting normal people all the time. And I think it would be really cool if we could do that more often. That's one of my big dreams.
Maybe I shouldn't say this on mic, but yesterday we were talking about this type of contraception that is increasingly popular which involves, is this family friendly? Can I say this?
You can say this.
It involves putting an elastic band around your testicles. Is that correct? And I wanted to interview somebody who is doing this about how it's been.
Yeah. Thank you and good night.
Okay, moving on.
Anyway, if anybody who's listening to this is that person who wants to come on the show and talk about it, I would be absolutely fascinated to hear more.
Yeah, or if anyone knows anyone that is doing this.
Yeah.
It's really a novel way of contraception that requires the man to be in a bit of discomfort for once. So,
fully support.
Yes.
Me too.
Have you like the curve, like starting from Kalas into like putting a rubber band on your testicles? Like, I'm not sure how you got there, but it's really cool.
Well, I think that's a really good way to end this question and answer section. Now we've got to the testicles, and maybe it's just a good illustration of what we do best, moving from Kaya Kallas to testicle contraception in 20 seconds. We are going to be taking a summer break now, but yeah, we'll be putting a few of our favorite episodes in the feed. So have a listen to them if you've not heard them or if you want to listen to them again.
Thank you so much for sending all your interesting questions once again, Patreons. You have truly outdone yourself. Thank you.
This won't be the last time we're going to do this. Maybe we should do this, you know, every now and then.
Yeah, but maybe we should only do it for our Patreon supporters.
Ooh, to encourage people to sign up to support us. And speaking of, we have loads of people to thank this week because we didn't do thank yous at the end of last week. The amazing people that we want to thank are Anne Wojcik. Of course, I'm going to rely on you because for some weird reason, you love saying the names of our recent supporters. Go for it.
My little king. So, this week, thanks goes to Rude, Hiska, Julia, Christina, Alicia, Steveg, Alena, Catherine, Yvonne, and to Kai and Eva Angela for increasing their donations, and to Gael, which is a birthday gift from Sven.
Happy birthday, Gael!
I
love it when people gift each other Patreon subscriptions to this podcast. It's my favorite thing in the world.
Very well done, Sven.
And thank you all so much for supporting us. We really, really wouldn't be doing this without your support. So we are very grateful. And in the meantime, please tell all your friends about this podcast. Our future is in your hands. We basically need people to carry on listening and carry on supporting us financially. Otherwise, we will stop doing this.
Sounded so cheerful as you said that. But thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you in September. During the break, you can also join us on a range of social media platforms, some of which we are better at than others. We're available on Twitter, sort of, Instagram. We're mostly on Instagram these days. And we're also on Mastodon sometimes. Blue Sky?
No.
Not Blue Sky.
I'm dumping it.
We're done with Blue Sky.
Sorry.
And we're sort of done with Threads as well because people aren't showing up there.
Wojciech, will you give us a tongue twister in Polish before you go?
Oh, I can give you a short one. And it goes, a cóż, że ze Szwecji?
What does it mean?
It means, it doesn't matter that it's from Sweden.
And on that note, we'll see you in September.
Bye.
Bye.
Au revoir.
Cześć.